Accession number 17664, Reel 4.
Ray Elliott's Reel 4.
Yeah, I think the theory was that if women could lead attacks, where did that put the men? The men couldn't refuse. I mean, they couldn't say the woman was braver than the men, but they were all doped up, because we've seen Harvard Oak needle marks in between their fingers where they've been injected and drugged up. And prisoners that we'd taken used to say that they were forced to join the Chinese voluntary army because their house would be broken into and their families threatened, their mother and father threatened to be killed there and then, shot if they didn't agree to join the Chinese voluntary army, so they used to join. But I remember one particular time when we were sitting in our dugouts, which were good deep dugouts, and sat there drinking our cocoa, and this chap walked in, and we thought he was one of the Korean porters, because they all look alike, and we used to have Korean porters who carried all the ammunition and the big stuff. He sat down, and it turned out that he was one of the enemy. He'd walked across no man's land, through our anti-personnel mines, through the trip wires, through the barbed wire, and into our position, sat in our dugout. And we sat there and thought, well, you better have a cup of cocoa then, mate. What we got here? We've got one of the enemy here. So because there was, he was hustled off and interrogated. And apparently he was the cook. He was the cook of the enemy lines, positions, just in front of us. And he'd given himself up. And I did hear stories whereby these passes were dropped from aircraft and given the Chinese a clear passage through, and they would come along with these, waving these bits of paper, give themselves up.
So what was the demeanour of this Chinese cook? Was he smiling or grim or what?
Oh no, he was right. He was just normal. Just sat down and he wasn't smiling and laughing and joking, but he was trying to tell us who he was, but we didn't understand. I mean, our Korean porters can speak bits of English, you know, and they knew what he was saying, but he didn't know what we was talking about, you see, so we obviously knew that something was amiss. And well, handed him over to the sergeant, and apparently he was a Chinese, he'd give himself up.
Did he have any uniform on?
Yes, he had his the old peak cap and the green, they look like denim clothes, but they're green, the old Chinese uniform and that. Yeah.
So why wasn't he fired on, if he had a Chinese uniform?
Well, I don't know, this is the mystery, you see. He got through, and that is possible to happen before, actually. One particular guard night, we used to have two on and four off, 2 hours on and 4 hours off. So you'd be lying on your bunk for 4 hours, dozing away, and then somebody would come and wake you up, and you'd say, your turn, here's your watch, such and such, hand over exactly everything what had happened. And off we go. I don't know if I should say this, but anyway, he woke me up, and off he went. And in the morning, all hell had let loose. A Chinese footprints were all the way up through the snow, through the wire, round our positions, all round our positions, back down again. And they were trying to fight. Who'd you wake up? Who'd you wake up? Who did I wake up? It was me. I fell asleep. And at a loud I was on active duty, on active service, and well, I was matched between Major Holden, matched up before Major Holden, and I got a month's pay, stopped, I think, or something like that. But it was really a criminal offence. I could have been really, really in trouble.
So how do you think it happened?
I fell asleep. I fell asleep. I said, yes, okay. He handed over to me. I'm off now, are you all right? So you really should make sure the guy's out of bed. That's how it happened. And I said, yeah, okay. And exhausted.
You just went back to sleep without getting out?
Yeah, I just exhausted. I went to sleep. Didn't know anything about it. And even in the morning, I didn't realise what happened. But on active service, you know. On one occasion, night time, there was a burst of gunfire. And I thought, oh. So we all stood to and everything, you see. And that turned out that this chap who was on guard was watching fireflies. And they were going backwards and forwards like this. And in front of his nose, he thought it was a light way down the valley. So he opened up. And he had to pay for the rounds he used. They charged him for the rounds he used.
How did they know he'd been firing at fireflies, though?
Well, that's what he said. You know, you see these lights, you see. You put two and two together and you realise he fired at fireflies. Which is also easily done, because when you're there on active service, you're looking beyond the valley over there at the enemy. And when you see something going backwards and forwards like this, you assume, well, it looks as if all the world, as if it's way over there, but it's in front of your nose. It's only a firefly in front of your nose, and they're bright, you see, aren't they? Quite bright. But they charged him for the rounds. Yeah, couldn't get over that. I had another chap, shot himself in the foot. I wouldn't mention any names. He said to me one day, I've had enough of this. I'm getting out. I said, what do you mean? I'm going to shoot my toe off. Wow. I rushed out the dugout. Bang. But instead of shooting his toe off, he went through the top of his foot. Yeah. I seen a chap in
so
a trench.
He did actually shoot his foot?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shot his foot.
What happened to him in the
Well, they asked me what was happening. I said, I don't know. Last I see, he was cleaning his rifle. Must have cleaned his rifle with a Roundup spout.
Was he punished?
Well, I think he was an excellent footballer, and I think that was punished enough. But
had he gone through a lot?
Everybody was the same. I mean, I've seen chaps in a trench, in a dugout, or one chap particularly, had his arm up like this, trying to get shrapnel. That's your luck, isn't it? Another chap, walking along the side of a hill, and slipped. Stain gun hit the side of the hill, went off, because the breech block in a stain gun is on a spring. And when you engage it, you pull it back and lock it. But it could go just back down and up again, you see, which has happened. It went down on the force of the impact, and up again, fired around, went under his, shot him under the arm and out the top. It was just a pure accident. And that was Buckle, his name was. He went off. Just unfortunate. He got shot himself, you see, that he slipped on the hill.
You talked about when the Chinese tried to undermine morale, for example, with these leaflets.
Mm.
Do you think that the Chinese efforts to undermine morale were successful or unsuccessful?
No. They had an opposite effect. We used to listen to this, you know, and they used to say, Johnny, would you like to go home? Well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it, that you want to go home. But, I mean, they would... You would never be heard of again. We'd heard of occasions when boys had been taken prisoner on patrol, and found with the testicles sewn up in the mouth. Another time you'd find out that a chap had been taken prisoner and they just let him go. They just say, oh God, and he'd come back on his own, wandering back on his own. Say, where you been? Well, I was taken prisoner, just let me go. So, you know, how can you say what war is all about when you get people? It's just personality, isn't it?
When you got wounded on that patrol, I think you said it was the 3rd of March, didn't you?
Mm.
Had you been out on patrol before then?
Oh, yeah. Many, many times. That's all life consists of on static warfare. You're on patrol all the time. And as I say, the Bofa guns were bumping all night long the positions in front of us, because we could see that the extent of the trenches that was increasing. They were really getting dug in. And when the winter comes and you've got to expect 40 degrees of frost, that is jolly cold. And we were dreading the winter. But fortunately for us, before the winter set in, we received all our winter clothing. And that was really first class. Gabardine clothing was good. Mountaineering boots with a tread on them that you could really get a grip with. And the goodies from Norfolk that all the Norfolk ladies used to knit. That was pretty good. And scarves and socks. That was we didn't fare too bad in the winter, actually, because we had some good clothing. And when I was in that American hospital, I lost all my gear, all my clothes, all my combat uniform, personal clothes, everything. All went somewhere. I don't know where it went. It all went somewhere. And I was issued with all American equipment. Now, the American equipment wasn't a patch on ours. That used to look good. You think, God, marvellous. But the British, our British winter clothing was far superior to that, I think, anyway. I found what I had, the only thing I kept was the boots. And they were high lace-up boots, and they were pretty good. I gave them to a mate of mine when I left, because I had to leave before the battalion left. I'd done my time, and I left them positions and came back to England.
Which units were either side of you, of the Norfolks?
We had A Company, B Company, and then C Company. I said we were. D Company. But we had the Australians. We were near them. We were near the Americans. We had a spell at... we used to move around. Had spells with different units and companies. Princess Pats, we were at Biégeron once. And the Princess Pats were there. They were the French Canadians. And they were mad. Absolutely mad. They raided the QM stores, took all the whiskey. Oh, we got the blame for that. But they were pretty crazy like they were. But the ones that you could rely on most were the Australians. And when they went in, and on an attack they really went in, you could rely on them. They were tough. Yeah.
What did you think of the enemy?
Well, the enemy, I didn't think much to, because they were drugged. The crack, the infantrymen were good. I mean, you couldn't underestimate them at all. But the rabble, the poor blighters that were drugged up and used to get hung up on the wire, you know, you could only feel sorry for, really. You just got to shoot them. Oh, I mean, you're far and away. People were coming towards you. You don't know if you're shooting them, if it's your bullet or not. People were just falling down. Yeah.
What weapon were you using on that frontal attack?
I had an American carbine. I had a I used to like it. It was an American camera. That's a 99mm gun. This little slug. You know. It's a bit smaller than the 303. And Sten guns. It's more like a Sten gun, but it was a wooden American carbine. Nice.
Did all your platoon have American carbines?
No. We used to have Sten guns. Sten guns, Bren guns, American carbines, and 303s. And the old Bren guns.
So but there was no uniformity in the platoon?
Well, no, not really. If you could... You used to take this carbine, American carbine, out on patrol. That was the one with a lamp on. And at night you could put a lamp on it. But, And I had a 303. I mean, some officers used to have a pickaxe handle. And wave this pickaxe handle about, you know. And you're in a world of your own. And then...
Didn't it cause problems having different weapons in the platoon?
No, not really. The ammo. You just get the American ammo. Some of them had pistols. But I know soldiers that used to have a knife. They bought themselves a knife. And strap a knife on your leg, you know. And if you're in unarmed combat and you lost your weapon, you've got nothing, have you? Whether that was legitimate or not, there's something else on it. I mean, if you get a chap who, what shall I say, is really making himself unliked, disliked to a state where somebody says, "I hate you," he's on dangerous ground because you're on active service. You know, you can't accuse anybody or anything like that, but you've got to be sensible. It's no good you giving bellowing out orders to people because you're on your own initiative. Like that chap, that sergeant that stood up or kneeled up. I knew that he'd been seen on that patrol, and he was disliked for that forever from then on afterwards. But you know, people get wounded from behind, and you're on active service, you know, you're all a group, you're all the same, and you're all looking after each other. You know, you've got to rely on people. Like I say, Winky Fett, you could follow him anywhere, trust him. Like, you know, you knew he was a good man, he knew what he was doing, and mind you, he was strict.
What do you mean about getting wounded from behind?
Well, a bullet from from somewhere where that couldn't, shouldn't have come from.
Did that happen?
Oh yes, that happened. I mean, I can tell you a story about a chap who went out on a recce. We used to go to these Korean huts and pull out the timbers to burn on our fires because we could burn smokeless fuel. And if that was tinderbox dry, that was okay. We used to go out and go wooding, as we called it, wooding. And he'd got a Sten gun, and he'd got a round up spout that wouldn't go off. It'd been fired upon, and it got a dimple in it, but it wouldn't go off. And he came back, and he went in his dugout, and he came rushing out. He said, "Who the hell's had my pie?" He had a meat pie in there. And this chap bending down, washing his Dixie can up, he said, "Oh, I did," you know. So I said, "You," swore at him, fired at him, and this round went off, and it hit him, and it went in his side and out the back and into another chap that was behind him and lodged in his spine. Now, yeah, I was, needless to say, he was marched off right quick, and we never seen him, anything of him again. But it's all over a pie.
Why did he react so excessively over?
Well, he was angry. He was angry. I mean,
just over a pie.
Yeah, he was. You're keyed up. you're so sensitive to everything. And
because of being in the front line.
Yeah, I mean, you're there. I mean, you've got these aeroplanes flying over and the loudspeakers blaring out, and you've got drums banging down the valley, you've got your mates being shot out up there. And we was putting a barbed wire fence up one day, and all of a sudden it was a zing. Like that. My friend Beavis had got a scar across his forearm like that, where a bullet had just missed his arm, or scorched his arm. We'd been shot at by a sniper. And you're living like that all the time. You see another poor old Chinese man dead, laying up against a post with a gold tooth sticking out. And somebody would say, oh, boom, and he'd knock it out and put it in his pocket. And you're living like that. You know, there's no holds barred. You know, if somebody's got a ring on their finger, that they're looters. They wouldn't bother to take it off, they just chop your finger off them. That sort of thing, you know. I mean, it's not a very nice thing to say, but it's, I suppose, human nature. People see something they want, looters, and they souvenirs, and I never did take any souvenirs or anything like that, but I've seen it happen. And you're living like that all the time.
What were these lamps you were talking about that were put on the American carbine?
It's like a, think of a car headlamp and a wire coming from that into a battery on your back. And you've got a special bulb in there that shines an invisible beam. And you can look to the length of my garden, and you could see anybody walking about. You can see like daylight, but it's a green shaft of light. At the end is a huge spot where you can see people walking past. And you can attach it on the front, on the top of your carbine, batteries on your back, and once you're switched on, you're able to survey the land in front of you through this invisible beam.
Did the political issue, or the political cause in Korea, play any part with you, or was it just of no interest?
Well, we knew what the reason we were there is communism, and North Korea had been invaded, and we were there to make sure that didn't spread, and we realised that. And I, for one, although you're not very old, you're only 19 years old, communism was something then that was really taboo. It was really nasty. And that would have spread. There's no doubt about that. And it had to be stopped. And we were there. National service, well, you know, I think that made men of a lot of people, a lot of young lads, made men of them. And you don't know what they would have been like without it. And I was proud of the guys I was with. No doubt about that, yeah.
So you went there in the summer of 1951. Mm. When did you leave?
I left the end of 52. That's when my time finished. I finished before the battalion left. The battalion was supposed to serve a year on active service. And I think I did about 9 months or something like that. And when I left, the boys, they were still in the same positions, 355. And then when they'd served their time, the mates I'd made there, you know, the ones I didn't go with, they just used, when they'd done their time, they came away, and then if they still had time to do, they went to Hong Kong. The battalion went to Hong Kong from there. We came back to Norwich, and I was demobbed from Norwich. And I said, farewell to my mates and that, you know, and that was it really. My army career.
Was your 18 months in Korea then just one long trial, or were there any pleasurable parts?
Oh yeah, we went to I had 2 weeks leave in Tokyo. We had a hotel that the army used to use, and we had leave, and we were able to go about in Tokyo and get a bit of the atmosphere there on the railways and the shows. Bit of hotel life. As I say, we got into this hotel and we couldn't sleep on the beds, they were too soft, we had to get on the floor. And Incheon, we had some leave at Incheon. You get breaks, and you get the NAFI come along. I mean, you didn't spend any money on the when you was on active service. You just had a little bit of money to get you through, to buy a few chocolate bars and some fruit from the NAFI. And the rest of the money used to be put by for you. But when you went on holiday to Japan, you had loads of money, you see. So
spent it all?
Have a good time. Yeah, didn't spend it all, but spent quite a bit on it. Yeah. And that's quite an experience. The trenches in Korea were quite comfortable. We had quite deep ones, cut out the side of a hill, and sandbags in the front. And if you can imagine a walkway through the centre, and then about a foot off the ground, a bank cut away. And on top of that, we had we made us have a bunk, which was out of wood, a wooden frame, and then we crisscrossed like a mattress. The MMG belts, ammunition belts, and so that when you got onto it, it was a little bit of give, and with a sleeping bag laid on top of that, that's quite comfortable. Unfortunately, we couldn't get undressed and get into the sleeping bags because we were always on guard, on alert. But that was quite comfortable. And then for a fire, we had an ammunition box with holes bashed into it. And the chimney was made out of mortar shell cases. So that was a nice flue. And in this, we used to burn our tinderbox dry wood. And we used to have a lovely fire. Freezing cold outside, and our little firebox used to be nearly red hot, and it got quite cosy. Cover the door up. I remember we used to have a wood wasp come in, and it would fly in and go straight up to the same spot each time, crawl along the beam that we had beams on the roof, and disappear. And out that would come again, fly out the door. And we'd watch that day in and day out. This wood wasp, big old wood wasp, used to come in. And he used to land in the same spot every day. And then we used to go out and get this wood. Something else I was going to say, I can't remember what it was now.